Together, Dr. Tar.
This is Professor Very Fragmented Feather.
This is the Midnight Pretorius Gadfly.
And this is Dr. Frankenhead. And you are experiencing... Insane ward. Well, fellow inmates, tonight we're going to take a little trip into what may arguably be the best horror franchise of all time. Talking about Universal Monster Pictures. Universal Pictures Monster Series Frankenstein. That's right. That's right. Frankenstein, which came hot off the heels of Dracula. And, I then spawned a whole bunch of movies, and we're going to talk about them. Beginning with 1931's Frankenstein, directed by James Whale, and based on Mary Shelley's novel Frankenstein, Modern Prometheus, which is superior to Dracula, I think, in every way. But that's just my...
The book or the movie?
Yeah, that's
good. The book, for sure.
Yeah, I
like both Dracula and Frankenstein. I think there's...
And even the movies, I think.
Yeah, the movies, there's an atmosphere. Universal has an atmosphere in their films, which I just associate with horror. It's all like comfort food to me, because this was like Friday night, Cool Hand and Big Chuck. We're watching Dracula, watching Frankenstein, or, you know, it was just always those things. So I just absolutely love
these. And Halloween was the best, because then they would show like blocks of them, you know, like... Mm-hmm. You'd see like, yeah,
and now fortunately on Roku you can get on Pluto TV rather, there's a Universal Monsters channel, Universal Horror, so that's 24 hours a day you can watch Universal Horror. But let's start with Frankenstein, 1931. It follows Henry Frankenstein, who is obsessed with digging up corpses, and with the help of his assistant, trying to bring life into a new body that he created by bits and pieces.
Fritz.
And then we have Frankenstein.
Played by Dwight Fry.
Yes.
Dwight Fry.
And starts that whole humpbacked tradition kind of thing. You know, we get that. And then we have Frankenstein's monster played by Boris Karloff, with amazing makeup by Jack Pierce. And
excellent makeup.
Yes, it is. Jack Pierce, one of the early greats in Hollywood, fantastic makeup. What I love so much about Frankenstein is that it's this notion, when I was teaching way back in the day, we had a section on horror movies, and I thought, well, let's do a section on horror movies. And there was an essay talking about romantic isolation, which is in horror, it's when we identify with the monstrous in the person, or the humanity in the monster. And we certainly see that, and we feel empathy for them. And Frankenstein is a movie that really provokes that romantic isolation, where we see
Karloff's portrayal of the monster. Yeah.
Yeah. We see the humanity in the monster. We see this innocence and this kind of, you know, the monster doesn't know what's going on and is being mistreated by Fritz. And you feel sorry. There's an empathy for the creature.
That's what I guess my big complaint about the movie, there was never anything at the beginning that, why the fuck was Fritz always like, or is Fritz just a degenerate that wanted to, you know, I could picture this guy like torturing kittens and shit like that, but I don't know, why did he automatically start fucking, you know, sticking the fire in his face. And why would he do that?
We don't get backstory on that one,
but
we don't. But that's the psychology of somebody who's bullied. You know what I mean? Like, because he's got a deformity that he,
they put him in now, there. Yeah.
When he gets a position of that power and he finds out that he has fire.
True.
And it's very primitive. Yeah. I have fire, you know. I think that's what's really interesting is that they changed his name to Henry Frankenstein, and it's Victor Frankenstein in the novel, which confused me because I'm watching the movie and I'm like, wait a minute, I thought his name was Victor the whole time, and I didn't realize they changed it. Heinrich was the really it was Heinrich, but it's Henry and stuff.
Do you know why they changed it?
No, I have no idea.
I think it's just more of an updating of the movie because it takes place in a more modern time. You know, I don't know. I'm just guessing.
Henry's more modern than Victor? Come on.
Oh, I don't know. Well, yeah. In 30s, I don't know. I know it's not. It was
Victor in the Hammer horror. Victor Frankenstein.
Yes.
So, no, I agree with you, Matt Gap. I don't know. I don't know why that was changed.
Maybe because of the stage play at the time? I don't know. It's more of on a play.
Moving forward, it was very German centric and even almost Nazi centric as the movies progress. You know what I mean? There's you know, once we get into some of the other movies, you know, the things kind of reflect the time because they're no longer just the Frankenstein novel that they're based off of.
In the 40s they kind of take on this weird time.
Well, I'm like,
you can't quite tell what time it's
even with the third one. I think the third one is the one that starts to look like Stanley Kubrick's you know, where
Strangelove.
I know what you're saying.
Yeah, there's the guy with the. Okay, so I'm just jumping ahead, but I just think there's a progression that I would like to note that it's very German, and there's very German things that happen that are not necessarily considered Nazi at the time until, you know, after a certain.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
But a lot of the way it was filmed was also is, you know, German expressionistic, and the way it looked.
Well, especially the third one. Especially the third one. So it's
The third one's kind of third one's interesting.
You say in the third one, what is the third one?
Son of Frankenstein.
Okay. Yeah, right. I just wanted to
repeat that. Yeah, because the first one's Frankenstein, then the second one's Bride of Frankenstein, which came out in 1935, then 1939 is Son of Frankenstein, which is probably why they start bringing that German thing in, because Germany had invaded and threatening war in Europe.
Son of Frankenstein?
Historically, the fascists were in power through the whole 30s. They came in power in 1939 with Hitler. So it was always there in the background.
Yeah.
But you're right. Then when it comes closer to the war and the invasion and outright fascism, you know, and imperialism on their part, you know, that's
a lot more prevalent.
Life's changing.
Yeah. It's like easy to write, you know, it kind of writes itself. And it's a whole different horror with these villagers and torches and like, that's Nazi Germany. Well, here, let's burn the books. Let's get the outsider, throw them out. Let's persecute the outsider. You know, those themes are prevalent in those later books. You see that, you know, and it makes sense. I mean, without that historical context, the stories are written smartly enough to where it makes sense. It's the name Frankenstein. It's the curse of all that stuff that comes with
it. James Whale, you could do the two James Whale Frankensteins, and then you get the others.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Son of Frankenstein is where they start really shifting towards the monsters, just more of he's there. You know, he's not a
character. Right, there are a lot of things going on.
He's less of a character. Yeah, and he's just...
And he's not the sympathetic character that he was.
No, absolutely.
Except the children. He still treats children the monster. Yes. The monster
He still likes to throw him in the lake.
Yeah, innocently, right?
Step on him.
That's right.
Well, Jimmy Dugan,
good,
deserved that. I hope he gets stepped on.
back to the first movie. Yeah, I want to say too before we go on.
Yeah, the first one.
Fritz, Dwight Fry was also in Dracula. Carl. Mm-hmm. He was in Dracula.
Bride, too.
As Renfield.
Yes, he was fantastic.
I just wanted to...
That's the best part. That is probably the creepiest part in Dracula.
It is so creepy. When I saw it originally, you know, on TV in the 1957, you know, I was 7 years old, and that creeped me out when he did that. You know, I just go, oh my God, that's scary. Now that's scary.
Yeah, and it's not a monster, it's a crazy person.
I think the first one is great because Colin Clive is great as a fucking manic crazy dude. Like, he was so crazy that he didn't notice the label on the jar that it said deformed, you know, brain.
Abby normal.
But I love the fact that we then learn from the doctor who played that doctor. Was that
Edward Van Sloan?
Yeah,
another Dracula alumni.
Yes, great, and he was great.
Van Helsing.
Yeah, that reveal was great. He goes, but the assistant, you know, whoever stole that brain, dropped the good one, and took the criminal brain. And then that's where you find the reveal, you know, the criminal brain. And that's also that gives you Fritz, you know, Fritz being a stooge.
Because he fucked up. Yeah,
yeah, and he
was
punished. And he didn't want to get punished for it.
He didn't want to get punished for it.
Right.
And it's funny because you see I think that's why the movie's really good. You see the kind of schizophrenic nature of Dr. Frankenstein, because he is yelling
at James Whale coming through. You know,
it is.
We
could talk James Whale because James Whale between 1 and 2 fucking levels up. I mean, like his 1 and his 2. Holy shit, the production value between those
and
two.
And what's 2?
Amazing. That's Bride of Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Well, that's the other thing you talked about in the original. Oh, yeah. I think this is kind of interesting because he gets the criminal brain.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that goes back to the argument, you know, what is evil?
Right.
You know, and it's, and in this, the movie proves that that's not evil. Just because it was a criminal brain does not prove that it's evil, because he's not really evil until he's forced to be. I mean, even when he's forced to be, I always considered him never to be evil. He was a victim of circumstance.
Yeah.
I just found that
like confusing. Child not, abuse. You know, yes.
It's nothing just, I ever thought about when I was 7,
but over the years that's the sign of being a great movie, because you keep thinking about it, and it was just
there's the pivotal moment where he is with the little girl, and the little girl's throwing flowers into the lake, and he throws them in, and then he decides she's a flower and he's going to throw her in, and there's nothing malicious there's nothing malicious about that whatsoever.
No,
and then he's panicked, he's like, fuck,
right.
And
you know that
was cut.
Early on, it was cut. Part was cut.
I only saw that version 15 years ago or so, maybe 20
at
the outside when it was re-released with the footage put in. Just like when King Kong was re-released with the footage of her, like, you know, him like eating people and stepping on people. That was like, oh, fuck, I can see why, because that was like, that's really graphic. Okay. But you see that, but then you also see that really, really underscores the monster's innocence. He doesn't realize. Yes. All he sees is something pretty, and he sees the girl and associates her like, oh, this is, you
and
can float too.
Fun. Yeah,
you know, and she's innocent as well, because she's the only person who treats him kindly. She talks to him nicely. She's not afraid. Everyone else screams and runs away or tries to threaten him, you know. And so it's a very sweet moment that ends in tragedy, unfortunately. But I could, you know, it is nice to see it fully restored.
Yeah, it's not
just funny.
Good.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay,
I was going to say, it's interesting comparing him to Christopher Lee's monster. You know, that's a whole nother subject.
That sweetness isn't there.
Yeah.
No.
There might be a blank slate, but it's that's more what it is, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Gadfly, you were saying something.
Well, it's about his rebirth, not the creation of a monster. The monster is created by the people around him. You know what I mean? That's they create the monster, and he is just being reborn and you know, trying to
negotiate
the word, the world. And that's why they call it the modern day Prometheus. You know what I mean? It's
yes, you know. Yes. But that's the end. That I just, when I was, you know, young and watched it for the first time, they had that scene was cut. You know,
yeah, but I didn't know that.
Afterwards, he comes and carrying the little girl. So and says, you know, so you know.
Yeah, you put it together.
Even at seven, I put it together.
Right. You're right.
They never made
it seem malicious that he did that. Sorry.
That's one of the starts of my fascination with what is not seen, but implied. And I am more of the school that I like that more than the actual visceral scenes sometimes. I think that's way more scary and horrific than actually seeing blood and gore. Blood and gore is just disgusting.
It's
not really horrific. Now. It's not terror. You're right. Yeah. And I think that just me being a 7-year-old kid watching that scene and then seeing the guy come carrying the girl, that affected me probably as much as anything in that movie. You know, I'll be serious. I watched that movie at 11:30, you know, on a Friday night the horror host, Selwyn, out of Indianapolis. And I was riveted to that, you know, and not only the movie, but Selwyn. That was my first intro to horror hosting. I thought, this is so fucking cool, you know. And, of course, I didn't say fucking at that time. I said, damn, this is so damn cool.
Yeah.
But the movie just grabbed me more than Dracula. You know, we talked about, I liked Dracula a lot. Dracula is very atmospheric, extremely atmospheric. I like
very that, slow. You know? Yeah.
But, but slower. And Dracula or Frankenstein, the original Frankenstein, the first movie just took me that was my introduction to all that genre, you know, and I'm just going, this is so cool.
Yeah.
I still have a book that I ordered from the back of Famous Monsters. It's like it's a softbound book. I'll have to dig it out, but it's Frankenstein, the story, but it's with the script. So you get panels.
Oh, really?
Pictures. Yeah, they did a couple of these, but that was like one of my first. So I have like individual. Yeah, as you're reading the script, going through it, or the dialogue.
That's pretty cool.
Of the movie and stuff. Yeah, pretty cool.
I like that. That's all right.
Yeah.
It was cool because it came from a Famous Monsters magazine that I cut this out. He had to actually cut it. It's like, oh, man.
When I think it's interesting how Frankenstein, the first one, differs greatly from the ending of the novel. You know, I mean, it becomes very much a the idea that there might be another movie. You know what I mean? Even the way they do it is kind of like, oh, we've ended it, that there's no way that it's surviving. But they build the mythos throughout the movies of Frankenstein being this thing, you know,
the movie was never as cerebral as the book.
Right.
You know, if you think about the book has a lot of. Of intellectual,
the movie's almost saying something.
Observations, you know, and
morality,
and it goes into, you know, and really delves into what is life, and how, you know, how is life, what makes life, and what
constitutes as life. Yeah.
Well, but it's also what should science do? You know what I mean? It's already questioning science and saying, how far could this shit go? And that's pretty prescient. Yeah. I mean, pretty prescient,
well,
you know.
Yeah, and also, and just how man views himself, you know, as on the level of God, too. If you're going to go this route, you know, at the time, they're quite, you shouldn't be putting yourself up here. There's, tons of stuff. But science at the time, they're already villainizing science, you know, with the where'd she get her ideas from?
Questioning, not really villain. I think it was more just questioning.
What do you think?
The morality.
Yeah, Dr. Head, do you think? I mean, you know, coming from the literate part of that.
Yeah, I love the novel. I actually had some students write about write about it, especially focusing on Dr. Frankenstein's hubris and his arrogance. Yeah. You know, and they convey that in the movie pretty succinctly. Like, I know what it's like to be God, you know, kind of thing. And that's it's the whole Icarus thing. You know, at its core, it's a Greek tragedy. You know, you got someone who's trying to be too much the power of the gods, Prometheus. That's why it's called Prometheus. Here's the gods giving, you know, fire or knowledge. You know, it's the same figure that we see in Lucifer. You know.
It's kind of interesting in him, though, too, because in Bride of Frankenstein, he's really questioning, what the fuck did I do? You know, he's very reluctant to help Pretorius.
The whole continuation.
I get it. But the characters in the movie.
I was just trying to get Dr. Head to wrap up Frankenstein 1.
wrapping up Frankenstein 1, we will move on to 1935's Bride of Frankenstein, which arguably is the superior movie.
I would say so.
Yeah, same here. I agree. It's
an awesome movie.
It's a beautiful film. I think it's one of the best horror films of all time, certainly of this
franchise. I almost hesitate calling it horror, but that...
There's humor, which I know Boris Karloff was. James Whale didn't want that humor. I don't know. I don't think he did.
No, it was the other way around. Karloff didn't want to
speak. I know that. He didn't want the monster to speak more than just kind of the grunts. But the humor was from
Whale.
Oh, was it?
He just has that. He liked that dark, macabre humor.
Who wrote the second one?
It was directed by William Hurlbut wrote the screenplay.
Hurlbut, yeah.
We knew
so you have to give him credit too for some of the humor. Come on.
No, I get that.
We very often dismiss the writer. It's always the fucking director. But I understand, but there's a very big relationship between the writer and the director.
I agree.
You know, you know, a lot of times we don't give credit to the writer. Now, I don't know the history. You know, Wales may have come through and said, no, not enough humor. I don't know. You know,
going by his other movies.
Wales wanted him. They worked on this because Frankenstein was so successful. Wales got to make his movie. You know, so he got to choose everybody that was in there and how everything was done. So there was just a lot of like non-interference with, you know, what was going on with him. And I only know this because of Gods and Monsters. If you've not seen that movie about. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Oh, yeah. No, great movie. That's true.
Great. But then you got to go, like, if you watch that, you go, how much of this is true? And you go back and read about a lot of that stuff. And it's amazing. James Wales, I wish he had been more prolific with the movies that he made. But, you know. He was too at the time out, you know.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
Too flamboyant and too out. So it was pretty crazy.
And he didn't give a fuck. And it was just,
he did not. No. But that's why I think Bride comes out where it is.
No, that was his problem. He gave a lot of fucks.
Yeah.
Well, true. But only if it was consensual.
As far as we know.
The Bride of Consensual.
Wait, is that another Weinstein joke?
No. Just as long as it was sensual.
mine are consensual.
Oh!
But I'm pumped. Thank you.
Suck it to me.
Oh, and it was only a footy, too. So.
That's right. Yeah.
Oh, that joke was for Dale K.
It was. Okay. There you go.
Dale. Was he upset? There's not enough sock jokes.
This is to you, Dale.
That's right. Sock him if you got
Number two is such a departure from number one. You
it
know?
Is.
Yes.
And like you said, it's I don't really think it's better than number one than the first one, but I think it's a progression, and it's every bit as good as because number one just affected me so tremendously. But then number two, when I saw Bride, I went, oh, this is so cool. You know, all the humor in it. And even at that age, I was getting a lot of that humor, you know, and just so well done. Like you said, he had directorial leeway, you know, and it shows. It really shows in the production I enjoyed that.
And I love the prefacing the story as if it, here's Mary Shelley and her friends and her husband talking about her novel, the first horror, the first science fiction novel, you know, ever written. And so I always loved that because it was
and then Elsa Manchester becoming the bride.
Yes,
she was Mary Shelley, and then she becomes the bride, which was
perfect,
absolutely
brilliant. And who'd she marry? Who did Mary or who did she marry? Charles Lawton, who of all people?
Oh,
Elsa.
Anyway, and another thing that is so great about this movie, as opposed to the other sequels, is this one takes place immediately after, like in the ashes of the burnt windmill.
We have that
crawls out still not dead, and we see that woman who just screams. She's so goddamn annoying, but that's her point. She's a clucking chicken, you know, she's a clucking chicken, and she does Whales it wonderfully. She's great at it. And that's how we start, and it just grabs you from the beginning. It's like you know, it just like the very first scene of Frankenstein where they're in the grave, the cemetery, watching, you know, the funeral, like, and going and digging it up, like, it pulls you in immediately, you know. This one looks beautiful. The script is funny. I love Dr. Pretorius. He is just so coming out. He's so over the top.
He's Wales.
And they were like extremely close friends too, from like theater apparently. Yeah. So
I can imagine.
Hey.
But anyway, that whole scene with
use a sock.
One of my favorite scenes is the people in the jars, the little people.
Yeah, what the fuck?
The special effects for that.
Yeah.
That is fucking mind-blowing at the time.
That was Alice in Wonderland.
And it still holds up today.
It was Alice in Wonderland.
Oh, yeah.
All of that stuff was Alice in Wonderland. Those, because you had the cards and the queen and the king.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
But, the effects, John P. Fulton, I think, did that, didn't he?
Yeah, those are great effects.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, my God. That holds up. Yeah.
You're right. It holds up today. It's so seamless and so good. Yeah, when I first saw it, I mean, that scene, you know, those scenes with it just blew me away, you know.
I watched a little clip, and apparently it was cut. They were talking about Bride of Frankenstein, but apparently in that scene, they cut it. You could still see it, I guess. It's like this other jar, but it's a baby sitting in a high chair, but it has Karloff's face. But they cut it. And it was just, I wish there was like some clip you could see that. That would be
too much.
Too much.
Well, and to bring them back to the monster, you know, he's kind of jaded, you know, in his second movie. He's very jaded in a lot of ways. But then his humanity comes through again because he wants somebody to be with him. He wants a partner, you know, that's like him.
A human connection. Yes, and we see that earlier with the hermit. You know, parodied in Young Frankenstein.
Hackman.
Yes.
Oh my God.
Genius.
One of my favorite roles by Gene Hackman.
He just nails it, you know.
The original, like you said, Dr. Head, the original is so good when he gets there again. It shows his want to be a human. He doesn't want to be some monster.
And
you can't
feel heartbroken for the monster. Like when the monster, you know, especially when he's tearing up, it's like, I think the very first time I saw that, I was young, I'm like, it probably made me sob, like for the monster. Like, oh God, I felt that. It was like so earned. Yeah. It might feel a little sappy, you know, but it feels so earned at the same time because the other guy is so like, you know, and you see that connection. And it's heartbreaking that it doesn't last, you know, because it can't last. But,
Smoking scene.
Right.
It's just drinking. And he's laughing, you know?
Yeah.
He's actually laughing. He's actually happy, you know? And that the pathos then just multiplies.
Yeah, that was
he grabs it by his hand and he puts it in his hands and he holds it there, you know, telling him to play the violin for him. Really, he's like,
yeah.
Because you never see the creature eat. in the first movie at all. The monster doesn't eat him. I was always wondering, like, you got to be getting hungry, man.
No one's probably hungry as fuck. So he's probably pretty hangry. Yeah. So
it wasn't a focus.
Yeah. They actually refer to
me.
I think in the first one or the second one, they refer to young Frankenstein. They say young Frankenstein because they have the father, I think, in the first one. And
yeah,
he says young. And as soon as I heard that, and then there's one other line that I think is in the young Frankenstein movie that they say.
What knockers?
Yeah.
So many. There's so many lines.
It's true. It's true. Oh, wrong movie. Sorry.
That's a whole nother Frankenstein movie.
We should really talk about that one too.
We should do a whole episode on that one.
It's should really.
Let's move on from the bride to the ghost of Frankenstein, or son of Frankenstein, rather, 1939, 4 years later. Now we have a different
Basil
cast.
Rathbone.
We got Basil Rathbone, Boris Karloff, and Bela Lugosi.
Who directed this one?
This was directed by Roland V.
Hmm. Yeah.
What else did he direct? He did like Wizard of Oz, didn't he?
Really?
Did he?
I don't know. Let's see. He made What Ho?
I know the movie wanted to be in Technicolor, so which kind of gives it a weird look too.
I'll say this: he made that third movie his own. You know what I mean? Like I think he distinguished himself and didn't try to be James Wales and did what I would say is the. For me, the last really good Frankenstein movie. You know what I mean? The other ones cheesy fare, but go ahead.
I was just going to say, except for the kid.
Well,
he was so bad actor and so annoying that you kind of
get
a cringe every time you saw him. You know?
I hope. That was the part that got me.
Terrible dialogue. The writing was bad for him. That's what I thought. You know what I mean? Like,
that's it. You're right. No, you're
should
right.
Not have been.
Well, yeah, a kid, so they're trying to play it safe, and wasn't this more like code oriented as opposed to the other two?
I don't know.
You know,
well, the first one is pre-code. I don't know about the second one or third one, but we just see a change.
I mean, pre-code too, wasn't it? I think the second version was
35. I don't know when code hit it.
Yeah, I can't remember when the code actually came.
But this one acts a little different than, you know what I mean, than the other.
Yeah, but this one, though, I love the set. I love the house.
Oh my God. Yes. That's, those stairway. Would you let your little kid climb up there?
There's no handrail. Yeah, that kid's going to fall to his death like tomorrow, tonight when he goes to the bathroom.
Like, get the fuck away.
Yes. Oh my God. Where's the child gate?
But I love the set, though. There's that huge, spacious kind of art deco-ness to it.
German expression.
It's German expressionist.
Yeah. German expression. Know? Yeah, it's gorgeous. Yeah. I do love it. But I agree with you, Gadfly, earlier. You said, like, this one, you start to, like, wonder, like, when is this taking place? Because there's people get off the train. You have this kind of very modern military-looking guy. And these villagers just, like, and you do, then you're like, when are we talking? Because the Earth or Frankenstein, you know, was written. We got, and when it took place, there's a sense of timelessness about it. It's old enough to wear technology. This is like experimental technology. It's almost like magic, but you know, you also had a lot of superstition. So you had this kind of combination of those.
That
things.
Could be modern Yugoslavia. I don't.
Yeah, know. Yeah. Well, now, but the superstition still remains because now Frankenstein has earned a curse. The family, you know, the name has like cursed the town, and these people are not happy that the son of Frankenstein showed up to get his ancestral castle. So they are not very happy.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's Basil Rathbone plays pretty good. He's pretty good in the role, I think. I think he does a pretty good job.
I liked him.
I wonder if he liked the role because he hated playing Sherlock Holmes because he thought it was
him. Rightfully so, because they were horrible movies.
Yeah. You know, but I don't
all
know
the Sherlock Holmes movies he did were just absolutely trash.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Let's talk about Lugosi.
I mean, I haven't seen him since I was a kid.
Most of them deal with World War II, which had nothing to do with Sherlock Holmes.
I don't like that.
Watson, played by Nigel Bruce, is a blithering fucking idiot. And he's not a blithering idiot in the books. He writes the fucking stories, you know?
Yeah. They play him as a comedian.
Okay.
The only really good one out of
The Hound of Baskerville. Yeah.
That's what I was going to say. That's the only really good one out of the Basil Rathbone
Do you like the do you like the Hammer version? Is that the one you're talking about? Hound of the Baskervilles, the Hammer one came out, and I think in the '50s there was a color.
Was that
version.
Was that
Christopher
was
Lee?
That Basil Rathbone? Oh no, Basil Rathbone did one too.
Yeah.
There's been like five.
But you're talking about
of the Hound of the Baskervilles.
Christopher Plummer,
Christopher Lee, and
Christopher Peter Lee, Cushing. Peter Cushing did one for Hammer. Yeah.
Well, I think
what about Christopher Plummer?
I think he did one too. I think he did a Sherlock Holmes.
Christopher Lee.
Did he?
Pretty sure. Hang on.
And Peter Cushing did Holmes. And then Christopher Lee actually played Holmes. He's a big Holmes aficionado.
I think Christopher Plummer played Sherlock Holmes in Murder by Decree.
Oh, I've heard that.
He was Sherlock Holmes.
That's correct. Yeah.
And James Mason was Watson.
Yes.
The absolute best pair of any movies of any. That's the absolute best Sherlock Holmes movie ever made.
Which one was that one?
Murder by Decree.
Murder by Decree.
What year was that?
1979.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll watch it.
Can we find that? Can we find that anywhere?
I'm sure you
can. Is that
on something?
It's on. Hang on. No, we can't.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure
I thought it wasn't available. Yeah. You can probably find it.
I remember watching it on like Showtime or something like that. And I thought it was really good. And I've always been a Christopher Plummer fan. And then, James Mason. And I'm like, hey. Mm-hmm. That James Mason voice.
Captain Nemo. Yeah.
Yes, that great voice. And,
oh, that's funny you say that. My mom absolutely hated his voice. She did not
James like Mason?
That for whatever. Yeah,
it's funny. Kind of lazy, goes, lazy mid Atlantic.
About that, yeah.
Well, it's because she saw Lolita.
Who didn't?
Yeah, she's like, oh, come on. I hate that novel. I've had to read it so many times and I hate it. I respect it. I mean, like, I understand the unreliable narrator in there. You know what I mean? And especially towards the like last 10 pages of the book, you really get this sniveling fucking piece of shit dude, you know, who you already think is a piece of shit, but he really becomes a piece of shit. And I'm like going, fuck Nabokov. We just got really.
Anyway, back to Frankenstein. We really got off track there.
Podcast food.
And that Basil Rathbone.
Right. Well, we have the son of Frankenstein shows up, and then we have Igor wants to have. His neck is broken from an unsuccessful hanging. He tries to get Frankenstein to find his father's notes and then put him and fix his body. And, you know, so he can have a strong body. And now Igor also. Igor? Oh, we have Bela Lugosi.
Bela Lugosi.
Brilliant.
And in Son of Frankenstein. Brilliant.
Yeah, who's fantastic in the role.
Best role ever.
Yes. So,
best role, I think. Other than Dracula. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah,
he was great. Menacing, terrifying, calculating, smart,
creepy.
He was a man.
Yeah, really, really effective in this role.
Was much better than J. Carroll Nash.
Yeah. And he was the Pied Piper.
So
he was the Pied Piper for the next two movies.
Do I look good in this monkey suit? Really? How did they fit that? I'm sorry. How did they find something to fit that when he wrote... When he's wearing that suit and he's driving the cart, J. Carroll Nash is a hunchback.
J. Carroll Nash.
Where the fuck did they find that suit?
They made it. They're prop people. Jesus Christ.
Quick! Yeah, it looked like... But it looked like Manhattan. Anyway, we'll look at it.
Yeah, so
Where are we?
We're on the Son of Frankenstein.
Son of Frankenstein.
The monster responds to Igor. That's the new thing here because they have this relationship. And so that's what we have here as well.
The flute. The flute.
Yeah, the Pied Piper.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Which and becomes that something that we're going to see going forward here.
Cool, though.
This idea of this flute and the relationship between Igor and the monster becomes even more prevalent in Frankenstein meets the Ghost of Frankenstein, rather, 1942.
The Ghost of Frankenstein.
The Ghost of Frankenstein, which was a follow-up. But now we have
Igor
a different
kind of
different monster player in the suit. We have Lon Chaney Jr., and then Belloc returns as Igor. And so what he wants to go now is find the younger son of Henry Frankenstein, played by Cedric Hardwick, to continue with his experiment. So what he wants to do is take his brain and put it in the body of the monster so he could be Igor the Indestructible.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
But
did you like this movie?
I loved it. Fucking loved it. I really think it's of the three, it holds up with all three of them. And I think
this is the fourth one.
Hold on, Tar.
We're talking about the fourth one.
I'm sorry, son.
We're talking about Ghost.
But you can say that about Son of Frankenstein.
I'm sorry. I didn't know we were on the Ghost. Because
no, that's good.
Go ahead about Son.
Lionel Atwill and Basil Rathbone have both great characters. Like, and Basil Rathbone, this shows his range because he comes off optimistic when he shows up, and you watch that descent into just madness, spurred on by Igor. That is amazing, and is the obsession. And then you find out, I think with all the films, you find out the crazy ability to be obsessed by all of the Frankensteins. You know what I mean? They all just are susceptible to just like fucking do, you know, just.
Okay, I'll do it.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's their heritage, you know?
They're
following through each one of them, if you think about it, they're trying to justify.
They are, yeah.
What has gone on in the past.
Or undo the bad stuff. If I can only ride it, I can remove the curse. Right. It's the same
hubris. Just make it work.
They fall into the same hubris. You know, that sense of arrogance and that, misguided.
But if we're moving on to the next one, which is
Ghost
of Frankenstein, that's where I think things fall off. I think it becomes almost a B-movie to me. It doesn't...
It is.
Well, it has good elements to it. But it just doesn't hold up. It doesn't feel like it's being driven by a James Whale or whatever the other guys, Lee, that guy. I mean, those guys really seemed like they had a vision. There was a through line. It was consistent. When we get to Ghost, it becomes a...
The only cool thing I think in Ghost is when they first get him out of the sulfur pit.
Oh, yeah.
And they're walking through the countryside, then... And the bolt of lightning hits him.
Yes, yeah.
I love that scene.
Yeah. That's a great scene.
And then Lugosi's talking
that
about...
That being said, I still love both of the two movies after that. I love Ghost and I love The House. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But for very different reasons than the first... Yeah. I put the first three in this, like, pan... You know, this... And then I put the other here, but still enjoyable.
Oh, yeah.
In that same way. So that's...
Absolutely, yeah. Mm-hmm. And Ghost is right up there.
That scene.
It does have.
I'm sorry, brother. Go ahead.
No, I was. I was done.
So that I agree that that
scene in the sulfur
pit is one of the creepiest scenes. Like seeing him inside that block, and then it has the unraveling of it, and just the kind of the. I'm trying to imagine. Okay, the smell of sulfur. It's got to be terrible, and like then the absurdity of like, oh, the sulfur preserved you. Like, oh, okay, sure, why not? You know,
apparently, Lon Chaney was claustrophobic, and that was like pretty much fucked when they tried to get through that. You know, when they had to pull that block off,
yeah,
and shit.
Anyway. That's when he became an alcoholic.
Well, he was already a fucking alcoholic.
Was he? I know.
But it's funny because I was thinking about
that. Anyway.
I was thinking that about the sulfur pit. I'm like, they're literally right next to a sulfur pit. I'm like, how are they working in this lab doing all this like technical stuff next to a sulfur pit? But that to go back to that movie, The Son of Frankenstein, is you see humanity in the monster in that he kidnaps the kid to kill him originally, and you see him about to throw him into the sulfur pit. You can't do it. Can't do it.
Yeah.
He puts him on the ladder, and then he protects him going up the ladder. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then my favorite part of that is when they Frankenstein, the son of Frankenstein, swings in swashbuckler like and kicks him off into the
sofa
bed. He grabs his son and he runs over to the edge and kneels with his son over the edge of the sofa.
Right.
I'm like, Jesus Christ,
it's like Michael Jackson dangling his kid over the edge. Look at my baby. I know, I saw it. I'm like, my God, you might fall in the pit.
No, I freaked out.
The smell. Like,
dad mode kicked in. I'm like, fucking get away. What the fuck are you doing?
Yeah, this one I don't like Cedric Hardwick in the role of the younger son of Henry Finkelstein. There's just something about him in this performance. I'm not a fan. It's not like I don't like him. I've seen him in other things.
Too many
that
lines
that he's done. You know, he's a character actor, but there's just something about this one. Yeah, it's. I still like it. Seriously. I think it's a low spot in you know, it's not as good as the other ones for sure.
It's starting the franchise, you know, and they're it's starting the mill. You know, let's crank them out. Let's, you know, keep this because it's a moneymaker. And
we're also in the war at this time, too. So
it's also like
people want to come and escape. Let's give them some, you know, deal with real horror.
So what,
let's try to help them deal with it. 41,
40?
This came on 42.
42.
Yeah.
So. And then what was the next one, though?
Well, the one after this one was 1943's Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman, which I think has one of the best poster art of any of the classic era. It is so,
the movie's
so
bad,
cool.
I didn't watch this one.
But it's so
you've never seen
fun.
This one?
Wait a minute.
Oh, what? Who?
I don't know. I have like the Universal Collection, and that's not part of the Universal Collection.
Okay, then, really?
Oh, what? It's not.
No, really? Oh, I remember when they came out on DVD, years and years ago. I was buying the collector sets, each one. But now you can buy the Blu-ray set. There, everything's in the Blu-ray. But
why wasn't that included? I guess
I would. I mean, it's one of the Frankenstein movies. Or did they put it in the Wolfman collection? Because
they put it in the Wolfman collection. I think
the collection I have has only one Wolfman movie, and that's it.
Oh,
so this Frankenstein versus Wolfman.
Oh, it must be a very limited, like, we're going to give you a little highlight. So it's not all of them for sure. Yeah, because there's several Wolfman movies. Only one really good one, but there are several.
Yeah, which makes it kind of cool.
I may have seen it as a kid, but I have not. I don't remember it at all. Go ahead. You guys talk about it.
Go ahead, Dr. Char.
Oh, no. Where was I? Chaney got to play all three of the monsters, though, if you think about it.
He's like Christopher Lee.
He did.
Yeah.
A chubby one.
One of the best fat vampires ever.
Ever.
He was well fed.
Well fed vampire. Very well fed.
That's right. Everyone, he just left people looking like beef jerky when it was all done.
Although,
I love
the thinnest I've seen him look.
This is what when we saw the idea of having more than one monster come in right now.
Yeah.
Like, because before everything was one monster, you know? And now, because I remember as a kid, like the fact that monsters could fight.
And he did Wolfman, which is a huge.
Yeah, it started it for me with Godzilla. That was like, oh, King Kong versus Godzilla. Godzilla versus Mothra. Sure, I had no problem, you know? But this is where Toho got the idea of Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman and, you know, the House of Dracula, House of Frankenstein, those movies.
Yeah.
That's where they got the idea, especially House of Frankenstein, which we'll talk about because it had the big three. Then that's why Godzilla did, you know, what they did, the big three with Godzilla, Mothra, and King Ghidorah. You know, that was like
their,
you know. I like the Wolfman. The whole thing about the Wolfman, though, he's like, whoa, I can't, someone kill me. I'm like, someone can't make a silver fucking steak knife and stick it in his heart? That's all he's asking for, you know? Like, it's some mystery. He's like finding all these exotic ways to kill a werewolf. And when Silver, I mean, that's the first time he was killed, you know, brought back to life. Like, Silver will kill you again, dude. Here you go.
But it doesn't really kill it.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, because he's resurrected.
The idiots
open up the coffin, and then the moonlight hits him.
Yeah. Right,
so you'd have to kind of just put him in a mausoleum.
The two grave robbers coming in, breaking in. I love that set.
I thought that was a good set.
Look at that set and stuff in him.
Yeah. I like the movie.
I do too.
I know why.
I really like the movie. It's, you know, there again, we're getting into a little more of the cheese and a little more of the. Yeah. You know, that franchise feel to it, but But at the time, especially, you know, when I first saw it, I'm going, oh, but, you know, I really,
this is cool.
It's a fun movie. And I liked the Wolfman a lot. You know, the movie of the Wolfman was one of my favorites at the time. I really liked that. I liked Chaney's portrayal of the human.
It was funny you say that, because this is the first time I've seen you think about it now, it's kind of goofy, but the first time you think, and he's animalistic and stuff, when he jumps up on that,
yeah,
that bag or whatever it was, on the canvas bag, but he tries to act the animalistic Wolfman, and it was just,
yeah. He does a lot of lunging attacks. His arms are, you know, hands are all out in the claws.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Full and body not very attacks. Far. And it looks kind of great. It's he's not, he's a, yeah, he's not attacking like a person would. Yeah. I do like the fight, but it's so
it's a fight. That's,
and it's always so, yeah, like a button in the game, collar too. That's, you know, the sleeves, yeah, are nice and cuffed and, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I like the fight. I thought the fight in him, it was, was kind of cool, you know.
Yeah,
it reminded me of every Western I ever saw, the barroom fight, you know.
Well,
you,
sure, know? Yeah, by the same, yeah, stuntman too. Yeah,
yeah, but
yeah, probably.
Yakima, my favorite. Oh, what happened? Anyway, a big screen went up, but that whole scene where the Wolfman was on top of some kind of machinery, but when he's supposed to come over and throw it. And
yeah,
just all the wire work that went through that was great. That was great.
Yeah, it's funny because my Wolfman was Oliver Reed.
Well,
that makeup to me was amazing, and watching him be so alcoholic, sweaty all the time, yeah, was great. And
yeah,
then wasn't it the guy from the Beverly Hillbillies that shoots him? Isn't that his dad?
Jed Clampett? What's his real name? Buddy Hackett. No, Buddy.
Buddy Ebsen.
Buddy Ebsen. Yeah,
Buddy Ebsen. Buddy Hackett.
Hey.
I love that Wolfman.
Hey, you guys.
That Wolfman, yeah, makeup, I think, is, to me, my,
I like,
favorite. It's my favorite, yeah.
Yeah. I saw that
the
movie.
The whole story, really, of the Olive Reed story is just, yeah, that's a different
I saw the,
that's
the
a different
Olive
beast,
Reed,
man.
Oliver Reed movie at the theater.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved it. I loved it, you know. And I was a big Wolfman fan anyway.
Yeah, sure.
I went into it going, ah, this can't be any good. Now, after it was over, I'm, oh no, this is
a
good movie.
You know?
Yeah. And I liked how, yeah, I liked the setup, and I liked the supernatural setup of it too.
Yeah.
And Hammer has brilliant, a whole, its own like sensibilities as far as pacing and time.
Yeah. Yep, we should do a whole other episode on, yes, the Hammer.
We will do Hammer.
Frankenstein, Dracula, you know. Yeah.
Which
I saw practically every one of them at the theater,
yeah,
by the way.
Yeah. I think we could do the same thing with The Mummy.
Of course.
And The Mummy, too. Yes.
I'm a big Mummy fan. You know, like, mm-hmm. I like them.
Yes. This might, I don't know if you can see that. It's Lost Son.
Yep.
That's,
yep,
Dr. Tarr's drawing of The Mummy.
Yep.
You did for me, Hammer,
yeah,
Mummy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's right,
so,
up there.
What needs, we got, to be darker.
We have one more movie, right? Is it House of Frankenstein, or is,
no,
there more,
no,
than that?
We oh yes, House of Frankenstein is last. That's 19.
But is there more?
No, there's two more, actually. Yeah, that's, well, House of Dracula. We're going to save that for Dracula, even though Frankenstein.
Yeah, let's save that for
that's
Dracula.
Bullshit.
But
that's because they're about the same.
Yes, it's exactly the same. House of Frankenstein, 1944. Boris Karloff is back. Lon Chaney Jr. and John Carradine, each playing one of the respective monsters. Now we've gone to the big three. We've got Dracula and Frankenstein and the Wolfman all together, but
all together.
Sadly, unlike Frankenstein meets Wolfman, I don't think there's no scene where they're all together.
No,
you know, because I'm like, that was the most disappointing thing. I love seeing Boris Karloff as this, like, this sideshow owner, and the fact that,
yeah,
he had Dracula's bones was really awesome. Like, you know, I love that.
That even had him.
Like, you know, like, people are like, yeah, Dracula's bones. I'm like, that's so great.
And then
he strikes,
like,
a bargain with him. Yeah, the Faustian bargain. I'll serve you.
And then he pulls it out because he's pissed off at someone.
Yeah.
Oh, oops.
Well, we also see Carradine as a very charismatic Dracula. I mean, like,
Dracula.
Yeah,
like, I love his over dramatic eyes were great. I mean, it felt like Tim Burton. It really felt like something out of a Tim Burton movie, you know.
His top hat. I think his top hat kind of is a little different than the other ones, but that was.
But the quality of John Carradine is his voice.
Yes.
He had that Shakespearean voice, you know, so projecting and when I saw the movie, you know, originally, I really liked it. But I also noticed that Dr. Head, that I wanted all of them to get together. And that just never happened.
It didn't happen. Yeah, because Dracula dies early on. I'm like, wait a minute.
It's literally a whole different story. And it's just like
The stories don't mix. Right. They don't really mix. We got the gypsy girl, you know, and, you know, that whole, and then the body transfer thing. Please make me strong. Make me, you know.
Right.
Right. Yeah, exactly. But
and this is the one with J. Carroll Nash being the hunchback and being all whiny all the time. It's like,
He was never as good as he was in Dracula versus Frankenstein. Tar.
With these dentures clacking all the time.
Clacking teeth. Oh my God. Wheeling around in a wheelchair and his teeth are just going, fuck. It's like the old cartoons of the false teeth clacking together.
Right.
He actually did that in the movie. That's one of the worst movies. And remember, we saw the guy that plays Dracula.
Yes.
At a Cinema Wasteland.
Zorkoff.
Yeah.
Zorkoff.
I can't think of his real name.
Yeah. We saw him at Cinema Wasteland. He did a speech.
Yeah. It's a truly, truly horrible movie.
He keeps showing up on my Facebook page.
Yeah.
Absolutely horrible movie.
Yeah. I like John Carradine as Dracula in Billy the Kid Meets Dracula. I like
yeah.
I like that one. That one.
Should we do that one? We could do that one. We're going to get together.
I wrote an article about that. I don't know.
William Bodine. I don't know.
No, I mean what
movie company?
Production studio. Company?
I have no idea.
What's it? Billy the Kid versus Dracula?
Yeah.
And what's the other one?
Yeah, it was William Bodine. It was the director.
What company
who released it? Nothing like. While we're waiting, House of Frankenstein. We have Larry Talbot again. He's cursed. He's wants to be free. But I'm like, you're hanging out with a gypsy girl and she can't just tell you, well, shove a piece of silver in your chest.
She's pretty fucking annoying.
Come on. She should have been like, she should know that.
I really liked the movie when I was a kid, but now it's like, oh, shut up.
There's a lot of I still like it, but it's because it's got the atmosphere, the sets where you see Wolfman running around, that creepy foggy forest, dead forest.
Universal
lot has beautiful sets.
Yeah, it is kind of a weird
there's a look to them that
Frankenstein,
it's so nostalgic. It's like comfort food to me, you know, like it reminds me of watching these on Big Chuck and Little John or Hula and Big Chuck and staying up way late and being spooked and just loving it, you know, and so I watched these yearly. I watched all these last week just for the show again, like, okay, and it's like I still love them. You know, I'm still like 8 years old every time I watch
them. Even
like,
how bad they are. Exactly.
Yeah, yes. I can.
Oh, there's all
okay with it. Like, I know, like, okay, this one's not as good. I can observe it. Like, okay, I don't like this one as much. But at the end of the day,
it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. It's like,
doesn't matter.
For the next, and there's
just something
that's
really short. And it kind of got me to go out and look at other stuff like this. You know what I mean? It when I was a little kid, these are like the original things I saw. But it also made me want to go out and look. Oh, you know, I saw this.
Well, I was a teenage Frankenstein.
Right?
Yeah, which led me to things like that. Yes.
And some of these movies are really short, so it's not bad. You know, it's a quick hour. Hour and 7 minutes, hour and 14.
Yeah.
You know, it's like they're not long investments, and they get right to the story, and they tell it in a compact, efficient manner.
Yeah.
But in the scores across the board are fantastic.
I think so too. Yeah.
I mean, all those, you know, immediately you hear those strings and that somber horns, you know, like, oh, here it comes, you know.
And like the Godzilla movie where they keep using Ishiro Honda's.
Honda, if Ifukube, you hear his score for Godzilla, it's recognizable.
Well, and as you said, Dr. Head, I mean, you know, this was the beginning of just this massive influx of horror movies and science fiction movies. But the beauty of Universal, they all had a look. It all had, even the bad ones, they all had that Universal look.
It was a universe.
You know, so iconic, you know, and I think that's another tie to all the movies, good or bad. You know, you always had kind of that. You knew that was all part of a thing.
There was an element that went through all of it. Yeah.
Yeah. And in all the Universal, not just the Frankenstein, but
which is kind of interesting because Godzilla picked up on all that stuff and other movies. The fucking Marvel universe. They're all kind of like this.
It's like an in-house look. Like here's our aesthetic, and we're going to make sure all the movies share it, so it becomes
franchise. Franchise.
Yes.
Well, yes. Exactly. And
that's the thing.
Cash in on it. Yes.
Well, Universal was the first to really do that. Yes. You know, and everybody else goes, "Oh, this is a cash cow. You know, let's do it too. You know, and people will like it, not just for we're going to make a lot of money. As you said, the Godzilla movies and all those. Well,
Thin Man.
But there again,
Thin Man was another one.
You were talking about Billy the Kid versus Dracula. That was shot at the same time as Jesse James Meets Frankenstein's Daughter.
Yeah.
Those were back to back movies. So.
We should do those.
Absolutely.
No, we shouldn't.
They're pretty bad.
They are terrible. Yeah, they are bad. but I loved the scene in Billy Kid versus Dracula. Spoiler alert: when Dracula's killed, he's killed. I even wrote it in the thing, not with a steak, but a steak knife through the heart. Yeah. I'm like, nice, sweet.
That's
close enough. Oh, what steak knife through the heart? Okay, we got a steak knife.
Sure.
Oh, that's
I'm
so
gonna give me a steak knife.
it's serrated.
It's just a rare killing.
It's serrated R.
Serrated. There's so much more. I mean, this is foundational to all of us. We all grew up watching these movies. Some of my earliest memories are watching Universal.
Absolutely.
There's just a love for them that transcends whether the films are good or not, because sometimes they're not, and that's okay.
Yeah.
But I'd rather spend an hour and 7 minutes watching a Frankenstein movie or a mummy movie than most other movies. So
yes,
and Ishtar.
Yeah.
I find myself going back to them all the time. I mean, in my lifetime, that's a long time, but I've never tired of them. It may be a year before I watch him again, but then all of a sudden I'll get the urge and just start going back to him. Like you said, it is not just they're good. It's, they're also just nostalgia,
I've digitized all my Blu-rays of them, and I put the year that they were out so that I have a list that I can play that goes in order of when they were released.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
Because it's great because you see the decline.
in between a lot of these, though. They had the Black Cat.
Yeah,
Black Cat is so good.
They had things like
that's a great movie.
The Mummy, we didn't even talk about the Mummy.
Yeah, we can do each monster.
We'll do. We should do the Mummy.
Yeah, I think we should. I think we should do the Mummy.
Because those Animal Man and Dracula. Kind of interesting.
No? Yeah, we can certainly. Let's do it. I'm all
As you
it.
Said, Tar, I like all the, there's a bunch of interim movies that Universal put out.
For, yes. We can. That can be a whole separate show.
Daughter of Dracula? I think Daughter of Dracula is amazing.
My choice would be Daughter of Dracula. One. We'll talk about those. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll talk about those. I'm next. Don't step on my shit, Tar.
I was just happy I thought of something to talk about.
I know, it's all good. We'll put it in there.
Because these I watch through them yearly. I will often put them on while I'm working because I know what's on, and I love the scores, and they're quick. It allows me, like, I can work for an hour, hour and 20, and like, I can get up and walk around. I just love hearing
that. But you know exactly where you're at in the movie, though.
Exactly.
If you're somewhere else in the house and you hear
it. Yeah, I'll hear it. I'll know.
That's odd. You and Gadfly. Gadfly's does that too.
I do a lot. Yeah. Yeah.
I sometimes prefer that to music.
And I cannot do it. I cannot do it.
No.
If the movie's on, that's it. I watch the movie. I pay no attention to nothing else. I can't do that.
Oh,
it's
okay.
Just not. To me, it's like,
but it's not every movie. It's only movies that I've seen a bajillion times, like Jaws.
No, even that. That's what I said. I can't do any of that. But when I'm working, I can't listen to music.
Oh, okay.
No, because I want to stop.
You're trying to.
That. So that's what it is. Those things, when those hit at a deeper level for you, so you pay attention to them at a different level. I get it.
Yeah.
To me, I can do that, but it's like, if I don't want to listen to the music, because when I write, I want music that doesn't have lyrics, because that's too distracting.
Yeah.
So I get that. But when I'm working, for me, listening to a movie, if I'm in a mood for a certain movie, that helps me actually pass the time more quickly.
That's pretty cool. No, I have nothing against. Sometimes I wish I could do it. Music, especially, because many times I try to write, and what kind of music am I looking for? And I'll find that music, to evoke certain emotions and everything. But I stop writing and listen to the music.
Yeah.
And because I'm a musician, I want to, it's always, and same with movies. It's an analysis process, whether I'm consciously analyzing them or not. I will stop because I want to focus on that. It drives me crazy because everybody all the writers I know.
I always
put this kind of music on. I always do this. I'm going, shit, man, I wish I could do that.
I'm going, no.
Movies, especially, it's just certain movies I've seen a lot, I can walk away and I can do it almost without even seeing it, though, too. I can go through a whole movie like that and it's just like, just kind of weird.
And certain movies are a comfort place. You know what I mean? Like where I can just be there and drawing and doing that and not paying attention to it. Other than it's there, in the background. Music, I agree with Professor Feather. I can't. That is like a fucking opium. I'll hit a piece of music, whether it has lyrics or not, and I will just be like, oh, shit. I've just been sitting here listening to that music for 35 minutes, it hits my brain in a certain way. That's why I generally don't work to music unless I'm painting. Painting is a much more action kind of thing for me because I'm what's considered an action painter abstraction. We're getting fuck off. We're the way the fuck
off. No, it's all good, though. But see, this is the gold, Jerry. This is people get to know us.
Don't call me Jerry.
300, after 300 issues episodes, they're like, they get to know us.
That's good rationalization. I like that.
I like that. Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, that's one of my superpowers, rationalization. I can eat that second donut. I'm not sure I'm going to get another one.
That's why we're all friends.
Rationalization, man.
That's right. Rationalization is why we're all friends.
That's right.
It's all good.
You only live once. Okay. That's right. Oh, hey, you can find
how about that Frankenstein?
How about that Frankenstein?
Wait a minute. We haven't started that yet.
I'm just throwing it in there. But there it is, our wrap-up of the Universal Monsters Frankenstein series. We're going to come back for some more, because as you can tell, we all love you're all Universal Monster kids. So,
Yeah, you guys want to watch me take a dump? Say!
That sounded like a dump.
That sounds like my dumps.
The Humpty Dump.
Very synthetic.
Right.
Microplastics.
And it smacks when it comes out.
It claps when it comes out.
I'm more a Humpty Dump.
This is your clapping Dr. Head.
Who's this music?
Argonica. The name of the song is Do You Hear?
What?
Hey, my son.
And And you have been listening to...
Totally abnormal.
Okay, save radio at gmail.com. If you ever want to email us, we also are on Facebook, Unsane Radio, and we have a website called unsaneradio.com where you can listen to all 300 plus episodes and look at the 99% really cool artwork. the one other percent is stuff I put up.
Okay.
Because he didn't have time or something. So
I've been slacking.
He'd been seen that. TarnFeathers.com is a website. Yes, it is. And TarnFeather Psycho Cinema is on YouTube. We have a few movies up, and soon we'll have a whole plethora of episodes that's going to go up. TarnFeather Psycho Cinema is on Facebook. We're on Blue Sky. Unsane Radio is on Blue Sky. I'm sorry. TarnFeather's not. Unsane Radio is on Blue Sky, if any of you people follow Blue Sky. And that's about it for me, Montag.
All right, Heavy Metal Horror Podcast is coming your way. That's right. We've been continuing our talk about the Showa Godzilla, and we're going to be going back for more later on. And we got some interviews coming up, and we are going to be working our way through the 100 best horror films of the 1980s. I started by doing the worst, but I realized, oh, we didn't see enough to talk about, so we'd have a really short episode. And some of these things I know of, but I haven't seen. I'm like, I don't want to talk about 100 really shitty movies, so let's go and do something good.
Let that up to Unsane Radio.
Were bad. Those were great bad movies.
Stand back.
You know, I don't. Yeah, those are enjoyable. When you get to the 80s, and you get to
the 80s. Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. No, you're right.
The 80s had some utter complete.
What? Oh, there's no shitty movies.
Oh my god!
What?
So much shit.
No,
the 80s. So we are doing, I think, yeah, 100 best of the 70s or 80s. I think maybe the 70s.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool.
Yeah. So we'll also have something fun to talk about. And there we go.
And then Midnight Gadfly.
Midnight.
We Freaks.
WEEFREEKZ. Family friendly webcomic on the Facebooks. Written
and
by
we are working diligent. Go ahead.
Or by our own lovely blue fez, John Boise.
Yes.
And we are working diligently on getting them published. We've actually made a little progress.
Good. I can't wait to get one.
Soon. Yeah, yes. Me too.
Yeah.
All of us.
Yeah.
It will be a big hit.
And yes, we all just got miniature micro prints from Blue Fez from the grave. And they're great. Because they're individualized for who each of us are. So, like, he said, because Professor Feather is gay for Poe, he gets this one. And because Dr. Head is a horn dog, he gets this one. And because...
Who's telling on me?
And because Dr. Tar... loves Eerie Magazine, or what's the magazine that
creepy, you
know, Eerie? Creepy. Creepy Magazine.
Famous Monsters.
He gets
famous.
This one.
Oh, Eerie.
Famous Monsters. It's a painting. Yeah. So if you see these, they're great.
And what about Gadfly?
Gadfly.
Oh, very cool.
Gadfly got fired from the Dumb Gum Corporation. He got hired.
That's because you suggested Billy's Bubba Gum.
Yeah,
Hubba Bug.
Yeah. But
the devil made you chew.
But he now is selling the odd box of socks. Because Dr. Head recommended me. Thank you, Dr. Head.
All right.
What do you mean there's three?
I'm sure I have a few around here that haven't been tainted too much.
Taint?
Too much.
What's your taint?
Taint? That's good. Taint?
Taint misbehaving.
Snap in the shower.
Name of my porn tape. Name of my porn tape. Taint misbehaving.
We've run out.
On that note.
Okay.